Let's be in order, please. I think the clock on the wall is maybe a minute or two fast, but we'll take it as the official clock. And good morning. I am Al Wall, the Administrative Law Judge, pursuant to temporary appointment, designated by the Office of Administrative Hearings upon the request of the North Dakota Public Service Commission to serve as the hearing officer for this hearing. This is the hearing of the application of Meadowlark Wind 1, LLC for a certificate of site compatibility to authorize construction of a 102-megawatt wind power project consisting of up to 63 wind turbine generators and associated facilities located in McHenry County, North Dakota. This project is identified and known as the New Frontier Wind Energy Project. This is North Dakota Public Service Commission case number PU-11-69. Before proceeding with the hearing, I will ask the commissioners for their comments and any directions for the hearing. Commission Chairman Tony Clark.
Thank you, Judge, and thanks to everyone for being here today. These are remarkable times in North Dakota by any standard whatsoever. And we have seen it especially in the energy industry. Of course, the oil and gas industry gets a lot of attention, but a lot of the investment that's gone in North Dakota has also been in relationship to wind, and that's what we're here for today. To put into perspective just how much wind generation has come online in North Dakota over the last 10 years, we started out 10 years ago basically with 0 megawatts of commercial wind production, 50th in the country basically, tied for that with a number of other states. And in the last 10 years, we have added 1,400 megawatts of wind. That's a lot of wind in a short amount of time. That's probably like about 2 or 3 traditional coal burning units. In terms of investment, it's several billion dollars. The total amount of investment that the commission in both oil and gas and wind has permitted over the last probably 6 years is in the neighborhood of $5.5 billion. To put that into perspective, the legislature, when it adjourned in April, the entire general fund budget for the next 2 years for the state of North Dakota is less than that. It's $4 billion. So it's a tremendous amount of investment. From a regulatory perspective, the reason that we're here is that state law says that it's the Public Service Commission who's to ensure that as all of that development takes place, as all of these investments are made in North Dakota, that it's done the right way. That it's done in an orderly way, that it's done in a way that ensures that all the things that we want to protect, our cultural resources, environmental resources, historical resources, that those are protected and that the investment is done as it should. And that is why we are here today. An admonition that you'll hear from me and probably the judge and everyone who's up here is if you have something to say, this is your opportunity to do it. Public Service Commission rules and state law deals quite specifically with how the commission is supposed to make its decision. And this is probably a little bit unlike a county commission meeting or a city commission meeting or a legislative hearing, maybe if you're familiar with those, in that this is a lot more formal. Now, the reason that we have this formality is not because we want to discourage you from testifying. In fact, it's just the opposite. It's just that state law says that the commission has to make its decision only on those things that are said and built here at this hearing. So we have witnesses, and if you get up to testify, you'll be sworn in by the judge, but it's because we have to make it on the record. If you catch us afterwards and say, wow, that was really interesting, but what you really need to know is this, we can't take that into consideration. So this really is your opportunity here. We encourage you to testify. We hope you do if there's anything that you want us to know about with regard to this particular project. And then from here, we'll take the information developed on the record and then be able to deliberate it as a commission and make hopefully a good decision. So thanks again for being here and look forward to a good hearing.
Commissioner Kevin Kramer.
Thank you, Judge, and thanks to all of you as well for the irrevocable gift of your time this morning. Special thank you to Bruce, Tom, the folks here at Verendry for hosting this. I have to admit it was my idea because I was quite certain if we had it here there would be coffee. Because, you know, you'd be surprised how many places don't serve coffee to us. I don't know what it is. But anyway, your hospitality is always great, Bruce, and we appreciate that very much. Tony has laid it out very nicely. He's exactly right. These are remarkable times. I would just maybe even put it in a different context. that I think about often, because a number of years ago, I was the state director of economic development and finance when the gross state product of North Dakota was about $13 billion. And right now, when you consider what we've cited and what's pending in the queue at various levels of possibility for investment in North Dakota, we have about $18 billion worth of investment projects in front of the Public Service Commission, and as I said, at various levels. So it really is a remarkable time. It's good to be us, but it's also important to do it right, because we are people of the land. We want to protect these resources as best we can, and that's our job here. We do it best, frankly, when the public participates. That's why we come to the place that is most affected. And so my admonition, like Tony's, is please, whatever you do, do not leave this place wishing you had said something you did not. You will be given your opportunity. We're here for you to hear what you have to say. And that means if you have a problem with it, if you're opposed to the project, if you're sort of neutral on it, but you have a specific concern, or if you're supportive of the project, we want to hear from you. It helps us build a complete record on which to make our decision. With that, we thank you and look forward to a good hearing.
Commissioner Brian Cook.
Well, thank you all for coming today. And Bruce, a special thanks to you and Brendry. You know, my dad worked for North Central for 40 years. I remember, though, I think the first meeting I went to as a new commissioner in 2009 was you invited me up here and gave me a good tour of the place, and you got good people up here. And I tell you that what's been going on up in Minot this last few months, your folks have done a bang-up job. There's no question about it. I mean, we've spent more time with Xcel Energy because we regulate them, but we've been tracking very closely the work Verendry's been doing, and it's top-notch. I was at a meeting on Monday. Tom and I were up there for a flood meeting, and Tom was up there talking about what you have going on, how you're taking care of all the customers, is how it's just been amazing how you've been able to keep things going. Nobody's been hurt, and it's going to be an interesting winter. But just thank you and all of Verendry for your work up there in Minot, and as we get through the rest of this winter. And I will say, though, I wish you wouldn't have hired Tom away from the PSC. Tom, I'm sure he does a good job for you, but we miss him on the Public Service Commission. Also, too, I see we have Bill and some county commissioners out in the office or in the audience. Thank you for coming by. You know, the only thing I would add is just that the Public Service Commission, there's a lot of things going on, and we make better decisions and we get better information. So it's same thing Tony and Kevin told you, is if you have something to say, good or bad, about the project, we need to hear it now so we can go back into the commission office and make the best decision we can for a balance between developing that energy and making sure we can still be a farming, ranching state. So thank you all for coming today, and look forward to a good hearing.
Thank you, commissioners. The record will show that it is a little after 10:30 o'clock a.m., December 15, 2011, at Verendry Electric Cooperative Headquarters, Velva, North Dakota. The time, date, and place set by the notice of filing and notice of hearing issued by the North Dakota Public Service Commission, October 12, 2011, in case number PU-11-69, for a hearing of the application of Meadowlark Wind, LLC, for a certificate of site compatibility to authorize construction of a wind power project located in McHenry County, North Dakota, identified and known as the New Frontier Wind Energy Project. All as I have previously recited and as is set forth in the notice of filing and notice of hearing and shown by the map, which is part of the notice, and which has all been duly noticed and published in accordance with the requirements of statute and the commission rules. The commission's notice of filing and notice of hearing for this hearing specified the following issues to be considered and determined upon the hearing. First, will the location, construction, and operation of the proposed facilities produce minimal adverse effects on the environment and upon the welfare of the citizens of North Dakota? Second, are the proposed facilities compatible with the environmental preservation and the efficient use of resources? And third, will the proposed facility locations minimize adverse human and environmental impact while ensuring continuing system reliability and integrity and ensuring that energy needs are met and fulfilled in an orderly and timely fashion? Ms. Smith, please state your appearance for the record.
I'm Molly Smith with Frederickson and Byron, and I'm here on behalf of Meadowlark Wind 1, LLC.
Mr. Armstrong, please state your appearance for the record and the appearance of any member of commission staff who will participate for the hearing.
Thank you, Judge. Mitch Armstrong, Special Assistant Attorney General on behalf of the Public Service Commission. With me today is Chris Marole, a public utility analyst at the commission. I move Mr. Morrell be allowed to ask questions today.
Motion granted. Let me, before we proceed with the hearing, echo the commissioner's statements regarding your participation for the hearing. This is certainly your opportunity to tell the commissioners anything that you think they should know about this matter. And I'm here to help you do that, assuming you need any help. Those of you who have testified to the commission before, those of you who are maybe familiar with legislative testimony before legislative committees, you'll know what to do. You certainly don't need any help from me. The only difference will be that for these proceedings, you will be what you say will be under oath, and I will administer an oath. You will see how that's done for the witnesses who testify for Meadowlark. But let me also say that if you have any documents which you would like the commission to have, which you want to talk about and explain to the commission, such as photographs or maps, anything like that, which you want to be part of the record for the hearing, those can be marked as exhibits. I will be glad to do that for you, and I will help you make them a part of the record. So if you wish to speak with me, if you have any questions, you can do that during a recess. I expect we will take a recess partway through the hearing, and in any event, upon the completion of Meadowlark Wind's presentation, I'll take a brief recess, and I'll ask again if there is anybody who wishes to testify or comment to the commission concerning this matter and who has any questions which I can help you with, and we'll do that then. So please do not hesitate to address the commission if you would like to do that. Ms. Smith, you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. Before we call our witnesses, I just want to identify who they will be. Scott Koziar with Element Power US LLC will be the first witness. He will talk about the need for the project and the factors that were used to select the project site, the project design, construction, operations, maintenance, the layout of the project, and the project benefits. And the second witness will be Todd Mattson, also with Element Power US LLC. Mr. Mattson will talk about the environmental studies that were performed and the environmental analysis that was conducted with respect to the project site. With that, we would call our first witness, Scott Koziar.
Mr. Koziar, as you know, your testimony is required to be under oath, and I'm required by law to advise you regarding perjury before administering the oath. Perjury is a false statement of material fact which you do not believe to be true. In North Dakota, perjury is a Class C felony, punishable by a fine up to $5,000, imprisonment for a period of up to 5 years or both. Will you raise your right hand, please? Being advised regarding perjury, Mr. Koziar, do you swear that the testimony which you're about to give in this matter shall be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Ms. Smith.
Could you please state your full name for the commission?
Scott Koziar.
And you're employed by Element Power US LLC, is that right?
Yes, correct.
And what's your business address?
That's 222 South 9th Street, Suite 2870, Minneapolis, Minnesota, 55402.
And what's your position with Element Power?
Senior Project Manager.
And what is the relationship between Element Power and Meadowlark Wind 1 LLC?
Meadowlark Wind 1 LLC is a wholly owned subsidiary of Element Power US LLC. Element Power is a global energy developer. We build, own, and operate renewable energy projects. Our senior management team consists of a lot of top individuals from other wind development companies that came over to form Element Power. Together, they have about 6,000 of megawatts that they led the development role that's currently operating in the U.S.
And could you just briefly discuss your education and your work history?
Sure. I have a BA in business from the University of Colorado Boulder. My previous work employment included working with RES Americas, NextEra Energy, and also a contract worker for Enbridge Energy.
And what's your role with respect to this particular project?
Project manager.
And if you'll look at what's been previously marked as Exhibit 1, and it's the separate binder in front of you, could you identify that for us?
Yes, that's the application to the North Dakota Public Service Commission for the Certificate of Site Compatibility that was filed on August 22nd, 2011.
And was that application prepared under your supervision and control?
Yes.
I would offer Exhibit 1.
Mr. Armstrong.
No objection.
Exhibit 1 is received.
And then I'll direct you to what's been marked as Exhibit 2. And if you'll look at your binder, your exhibit binder, it's in there. Can you identify that document for us?
Yes, these are the revised sections 5.1 and 6.2 of the Certificate of Site Compatibility application. Section 5.1 deals with the temporary and permanent impacts to the project. They have been updated since our initial layout that was done for the filing of the original application on August 22nd, 2011. Originally, when we filed the application, our estimates for the construction impacts were roughly 200 to 275 acres, and permanent impacts being 50 to 70 acres. That has since been updated. And the current layout, based on the final layout that we have today, is the temporary impacts are roughly 287 to 315 acres during construction, and permanent impacts will be approximately 64 to 65 acres.
All right, and if you'll look at exhibit, the second part of it, which is 6.2, can you explain the update that was made to that section?
Yep. Section 6.2 is a table of potential turbine types that we would be using for the project. The change is we had added two turbines, the Gamesa G97 2.0 megawatt turbine and the Gamesa G90 2 megawatt turbine.
Okay. I would offer Exhibit 2.
Mr. Armstrong.
No objection.
Exhibit 2 is received.
And just to clarify, you added these turbines, but have all of your analyses, let's say your shadow flicker analysis, your acoustic analysis, your layout, they take into a consideration these turbine types that you've added?
Yes.
And then if you'll look at what's been marked as Exhibit 3, it is in the binder as well. Can you identify that document for us?
Yes, this is the updated U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service easements, including fish and wildlife wetland easements, as well as grassland easements. In the original map that we had provided with the application on August 22, 2011, there was a grassland easement that was omitted in the far northwest corner of the project that was identified incorrectly by a title company that we were working with, and also two fish and wildlife wetland easements that were previously marked as wetlands, in fact, have turned out not to be fish and wildlife easements, so we have removed those from this map.
Okay, and so this is an update to Figure 7 in the application, is that right?
Correct.
I would offer Exhibit 3.
Mr. Armstrong.
No objection.
Exhibit 3 is received.
Could you give us just a basic overview of the project?
Sure. The New Frontier project is 102 megawatt gross capacity, 99 megawatt net capacity wind energy conversion facility. The project is located on approximately 11,300 privately owned acres in the southwest part of McHenry County, just north of the town of Russo. The project will interconnect to the grid via the Great River Energy owned McHenry substation near Voltaire, North Dakota, via a 15-mile generator lead tie line that has been permitted and approved by McHenry County.
And could you discuss for the commission the interconnection process and whether you will need an interconnection agreement for this project?
Yes, this project is currently in the interconnection process. We had filed a interconnection agreement with the Midwest Independent System Operator in 2007. We are currently in the later stages of the facility study and expect to have an interconnection agreement signed first quarter of 2012.
And has Meadowlark obtained the necessary property rights in order to construct the project on the site?
Yes, we have agreements with all the landowners on the approximate 11,000 acres of the site.
And who will construct, own, and operate the project?
Meadowlark Wind 1 LLC will own, operate, and construct the project.
Could you please discuss for us the need for this particular project?
Sure. Currently, we do not have a signed offtake with a particular utility. We currently are in talks with numerous utilities in North Dakota and in general the upper Midwest. We feel that this project can serve not only utilities that are within North Dakota, but also utilities that are within the MISO or WAPA footprints, as well as farther east too, such as TVA. We believe the project will help stabilize wholesale power prices. It will allow utilities to diversify their generation portfolios, and will also assist utilities to satisfy their renewable energy standards set by certain states, such as Minnesota, Wisconsin, Illinois, and Missouri is actually going through the process now.
And what site selection and project viability factors or considerations were taken into account?
The general factors that we use, obviously, are the quality of wind resource. Even for North Dakota, we believe this site has an exceptionally high wind resource, even compared to other sites within North Dakota. There's available land seen through the 11,000 acres that we have worked with private landowners to sign easements. There's suitable transmission. Through our MISO studies, we have found that this is one of the very few projects that can actually connect to the grid without having major 345 backbones needed to be built to actually connect. And we've also considered the environmental issues, making sure that we're complying with the North Dakota Siting Act.
And have you looked at any project-specific design or any construction limitations that are specific to this particular project in this site?
Yes. We took into consideration the setbacks requirements from occupied residences, property lines, existing roads, the avoidance of microwave beam paths, avoidance of missile silos and underground cabling, turbine spacing requirements, engineering considerations such as geotechnical results, and also the minimization of permanent impacts to wetlands and water bodies.
And were there any economic considerations that you took into account?
Yeah, all of the factors that I guess I just talked about do have certain economic considerations that we do need to consider. Wind resource, the energy that we can produce, the cost of our interconnection, et cetera, and also taking into consideration production tax credit.
And could you describe the various components that will be part of this project?
Sure, this project will consist of turbines, pad-mounted transformers, a system of underground electrical collection line and communication cables, project substation, an operation and maintenance building, access roads, and permanent met towers.
And what's the anticipated total cost of the project?
Approximately $200 million.
And now let's talk a little bit about the turbines that you're considering for this project. Could you tell us how many turbines would be used?
We have set into the application six different turbines that we potentially could use. That would be the GE 1.6 82.5 meter, the Vestas V90 1.8 megawatt turbine, the Siemens 2.3 101 turbine, the Siemens 2.3 megawatt 113 turbine, the Gamesa G90 2.0 turbine, the Gamesa G97 2.0 megawatt turbine.
And how many total turbines would you maybe use, say, if you use the smallest megawatt turbine?
If we use the smallest turbine, which would be the GE 1.6 megawatt turbine, we would use 63 sites.
And if you use the largest, how many sites would you use?
If we use one of the Siemens 2.3 megawatt turbines, we would use approximately 44 of the sites.
And what are some of the general features of the turbines and then the foundations for those?
Sure. For the six turbines, the general specifications, the generator size is approximately 1.6 to 2.3 megawatts. The hub height would be between 78 and 80 meters. The rotor diameter on the smallest turbine is 82.5 meters, and the largest is 113. We will be using a SCADA system, which will allow for remote control of the plant. We'll do lighting per the manufacturers and FAA regulations. The foundations, typically the final foundation are designed specifically for soil types, and they would range between 7 and 10 feet thick and 48 to 60 feet wide.
And then if you'll look at what's been marked as Exhibit 4, and I'll note for the commissioners and the judge and counsel that there are two additional maps that we're including in Exhibit 4. I'll show those to you. There's one that says turbine locations, access roads, underground electrical circuits, dated December 12th, 2011. And then that one will go behind the one that's currently in the binder. And then the second one is one that shows areas surveyed for cultural resources. And that will also be, collectively, those three maps will be part of our Exhibit 4. So I have for you identified those particular maps, but could you tell us what, I guess I'm just going to offer those now as Exhibit 4.
Mr. Armstrong.
No objection.
Exhibit 4 is received.
Could you tell us what the difference is between the first map or what the first map is compared to the second map?
Sure. Well, the very first map that I believe is December 7th that was included in the hearing package was the final layout that we submitted at the time of filing the hearing exhibits. The second map, which is the December 12th map, is actually an updated layout map. We had one access road that was requested to be changed by a landowner from a turbine, and we've made that change for that one access road.
And was that access road change the only change between the map that was dated December 2nd and the map dated December 12th?
Yes.
All right. And referencing this particular map, the second map that's your final layout, could you discuss for us the project layout?
Sure. The project consists of up to 63 turbines with three alternatives. The spacing between the turbine rows is approximately a quarter mile. The rows of turbines range from the general direction of southeast to northwest. The spacing between the turbines is approximately a little over a half mile.
And is the layout, and I should note that the layout is also up here on the board in front of us, is the layout that you have here dependent on which type of turbine you select?
No, the locations that we have selected will be the locations for any turbine that we do choose. If we choose a smaller turbine, like the 1.6 turbine, we will utilize all 63 sites. If we choose a larger turbine, like the Siemens 2.3, we'll use a subset of that 63 locations.
All right. And out of the approximately 11,300 acres that are within the project site, approximately how many of those acres will be impacted during the life of the project?
The approximate impact will be 65 acres, which is almost a little over one half of 1% of the entire site.
And then if you'll turn to what's in the exhibit binder, is that under Exhibit 4 is that third map. Could you tell us what this map is depicting?
Yes, this is a map that overlays the cultural field surveys that were done in reference to what our final layout is. Back in Exhibit 3, the updated fish and wildlife easements, I had discussed that we had found a grassland easement that was inadvertently missed. That property, when we had our original layout, actually was planned to have three permanent turbines and two alternates. With the finding of that grassland easement, we are removing facilities entirely from any properties that have grassland easements. We had to adjust our layout, which is the final layout you see today. However, there are small areas where our cultural surveys do not match up to the final layout.
And so that would include, if we're looking at this particular map up in the northwest corner, we see an area that was surveyed, but for instance, turbine number 64 over on the far east, kind of southeast side, was not surveyed. Is that right?
Correct.
And then the part of the substation site was also not surveyed. Is that right?
Yeah, we have, there was a swath of approximately 200 feet that was surveyed, but depending on the actual final siting of the project substation, we may go outside that by a couple hundred feet.
Okay. And then were there also changes to the access roads and the collector lines that also will necessitate additional cultural resource surveys?
There was. Due to the high volume of wetland and fish and wildlife easements in the area, after we conducted our surveys, there was a fair amount of roads that needed to be slightly adjusted around wetlands to reduce those impacts, and that is the reason that some of those cultural resources don't cover those areas.
And so your cultural resource surveys and your wetland surveys were conducted initially at the same time, is that right?
Correct.
And so then when you received your wetland surveys, that caused some changes that have not yet been surveyed, is
correct?
That right? All right. And could you talk about the different setbacks for this project?
Sure. The setbacks that we utilized on the site, for any occupied residents, we had at least 1,400 feet measured from the center of the turbine base to the occupied residence. For the missile facility, we use a setback of 2,640 feet. Any state or federal highway, we utilize the 1.1 times the tip height from the edge of the right-of-way. For any improved township or county road, we use the 1.1 times the tip height setback. The project boundary or any non-participating landowners, we use the 1.1 times the blade tip height setback. Any overhead transmission line, we used a 1.1 times the blade tip height setback. And any unimproved county or township roads or section lines, we used 150 feet from the center line.
And could you talk, you mentioned the 150-foot setback from the county. Are there any other setback requirements for McHenry County?
Currently, McHenry County has two setbacks. One is 150 feet from the center line of a town or county road, and then a 250-foot setback from any state or federal highway. However, we have been in discussions with the county over the past month and a half. The county has been interested in implementing a wind ordinance. We have been working together to go through that ordinance on specific items, and I do not feel that any stricter standards will be implemented than what we have presented today.
All right. If you'll look at what's been previously marked as Exhibit 5 in the exhibit binder, could you identify that for us?
Sure. Exhibit 5 is the turbine setback from residences.
And was this prepared under your supervision and control?
Yes.
I would offer Exhibit 5.
Mr. Armstrong.
No objection.
Exhibit 5 is received.
And referring to Exhibit 5, could you explain what this depicts?
Sure. In the map, any of the green homes that are within the map are participating landowners. Any of the homes that are colored blue are non-participant. The shortest distance between a turbine and a participating landowner's residence is 1,403 feet, which is near turbine 15. The shortest distance between a turbine and a non-participating landowner residence is 2,540 feet.
And those are measured from the center of the turbine, is that right?
Correct. There are also several homes that are located on the south end of the project, which we consider the town of Russo. We use a conservative satellite imagery at the time that we had done some of the houses and marked numerous homes that were in that area. And then upon field verification, there are actually only three or four of residences that are actually built. The rest of the homes had been knocked down.
Okay, so you included all the homes that are identified on there just to be complete?
Yes.
All right. And I should point you to the second page of Exhibit 5. Can you explain what's shown in that chart?
Sure. This is just the chart of the homes that are within the project area. The homes that are colored in green are participant landowners, and the closest or the distance to the turbine from the center of the turbine. And then the ones in the white are non-participants and the closest distance to a turbine for those homes.
Right. And then I'll direct you to what's been marked as Exhibit 6 in the binder. Can you tell us what that is?
Yeah, Exhibit 6 is a email from Jim Larson at the U.S. Air Force in Minot. Over the course of developing the project, I have been in contact with him, sending him GIS files of turbine locations, access roads, cable locations. One of his concerns is there is a U.S. Air Force missile cable that does run through the site, and this email confirms back to us that the design that we have done to accommodate for that cable, he has been okay with.
Okay, and that includes the final layout that you
yes.
have. All right. And I would offer then Exhibit 6.
Mr. Armstrong?
No objection.
Exhibit 6 is received.
And you also mentioned that there was a setback from a missile facility that's part of your setbacks. Can you explain any communications you've had regarding that setback?
Sure. When I started with Element Power, there was a critical and issue analysis complete on the project, which had brought up the fact of the missile silos. And I contacted Denny Ho at the U.S. Air Force at Minot, where he explained that they prefer a 1,200-foot setback from the missile facility, and you know, like I said, we have explained, we work with Jim Larson to send those to the actual for the cabling. We currently were approximately, I think three, I'll have to get the exact number, but it's over 3,000 feet from the facility.
Okay. I think you, I'm just going to make sure that's right. I think it was 2640, is that right?
That's the minimum distance
that's
we
minimum.
Use.
Yeah, okay.
But we're actually over that.
Okay, I see. So that's your minimum setback.
Yes.
And were there any other discussions with the Air Force about?
Yeah, with Denny, there actually is a military training fly zone across most of the site. At the time, Denny said that he did not have any concerns with it, and if there were concerns, that he would make those comments when we filed for our FAA determinations.
Okay. And have you filed for any FAA determinations?
We have filed for FAA determinations on a previous layout, and they all came back with no issues. We will file amendments upon the final approval of the project layout.
Okay. Could you describe for us the electrical system that works with a wind farm like this?
Sure. So the energy that is produced from the turbine will be collected at the base and amped up to 34.5 kilovolts, be sent over a collection of underground cables to our project substation. At that point, it will be amped up to 115 kilovolts and will be sent over the 15-mile generator lead time line to the McHenry substation.
And what about your installation of your collection system? Can you describe that?
Sure. The installation, the collection lines will be buried at 48 inches below ground, unless otherwise dictated by construction issues. They will be installed either via trencher or in certain situations by boring.
And what access roads will be required for this project?
During construction, temporary access roads will be needed up to 40 feet wide. The permanent access roads will be approximately 16 to 18 feet wide, and the materials that will be used will be gravel.
And do you plan to enter into any sort of road use agreement with the county or the township?
Yeah, currently I have provided both Bjornsen Township and McHenry County a copy of a road use agreement that we are currently working through.
And could you discuss for us, turning kind of to the construction aspect of the project, what personnel will be involved in construction?
Sure. From Metalark, we will have an on-site construction manager that will help schedule and coordinate with our engineering, procurement, and construction firm. Ongoing coordination between the project development, design, and construction teams will be ongoing throughout the construction of the project. And to the extent possible, we hope to use local suppliers such as gravel, concrete, electricians, and earthwork.
And what do you anticipate will be the schedule for construction of the project?
As I had testified before, you know, currently we do not have a formal signed offtake with the project. We are still hopeful that in the extreme near term that something, if something would come through, that we could be under construction in the second quarter of 2012. If that would happen, we would complete construction in the fourth quarter of 2012, followed by the test operations of the project, and then be commercially operational by the end of next year. If for some reason we cannot find an off-taker for construction early next year, the project would then potentially move forward in 2013 or 2014.
And if we now turn to the operations and maintenance side of the project, could you discuss the personnel that will be involved in that aspect of the project?
Sure. Following the commission, the operation, care, and custody of the facility will be transferred from the construction team to a third-party experienced and licensed O&M company. Metalark will have an on-staff operations manager to oversee that operations maintenance company. We will have a contract with the turbine supplier to provide O&M support for the turbines. The construction manager will work with the operation maintenance manager, the third-party operation maintenance company, the turbine supplier, operation maintenance personnel to ensure smooth transitions between construction, testing, commissioning, and commercial operations.
And as far as ensuring the project is constructed in accordance with all permits and regulations, will that also be the responsibility of the operations and maintenance team?
Yes.
And could you discuss any inspections that will be conducted and when those will occur? Yeah.
There'll be initial inspections once the project is commercially operation. There are annual inspections for all turbines, and the turbine suppliers will also remotely monitor the project on a daily basis, and qualified technicians will also conduct periodic visual inspections.
And so when the O&M staff is not on site, they are still able to monitor the project?
Yes, through the SCADA system that would be installed.
And will the project be designed and constructed and operated in compliance with all applicable federal, state, and local regulations?
Yes.
And will Meadowlark participate in the North Dakota One Call system?
Yes, we will both utilize the One Call for construction prior to excavation, and Meadowlark Wind will also participate as a facility owner for future One Calls on our facilities.
And what steps will or has Meadowlark taken to prepare for any potential emergency situations at the site?
Yep. Meadowlark will work with our contractor, local EMS, fire, police, to come up with a plan for potential emergency situations. Element Power has also started the approach of requiring the contractor to have a third-party EMS on staff that will help alleviate local resources.
And as far as decommissioning and the project down the road, what is the estimated life of the project and what plans do you have for decommissioning?
Typically, the estimated life of a wind farm project is approximately 25 years. Meadowlark will file a decommissioning plan prior to the operations of the project. We'll also explore alternatives for decommissioning, such as retrofitting turbines with new technology. And if the decision is to decommission, Meadowlark will restore the site in accordance with the commission's decommission rules.
And what are some of the benefits of this project?
Some of the benefits of this project are jobs during construction. Approximately 150 to 200 construction workers are anticipated at the peak of construction, of which approximately we are hoping that 20 to 30% will be local hires. There will be approximately 6 to 8 permanent jobs created for the operations and maintenance facility. The percentage of local hires will depend on the skill set that is provided from the area. There'll be lease payments to the landowners that are participating in the project. There are state and local taxes that will be paid by the project, and there'll be local expenditures at restaurants, gas stations, and other businesses.
And if you'll look at what's been marked as Exhibit 7, and this was provided separately today to the commissioners as well, but could you identify that document for us?
Yes, it's the certification relating to order provisions.
And who signed this particular document for Meadowlark?
The Chief Development Officer of Element Power, Chris Taylor, signed the document.
And does Mr. Taylor have the authority to bind Meadowlark to adhere to these provisions?
Yes.
I would offer Exhibit 7.
Mr. Armstrong.
No objection. I would just note that the tree and shrub mitigation specifications aren't attached to it.
Oh, I'll provide those to you.
Okay, thank you.
Do you intend, does Meadowlark intend to? I'm sorry.
Exhibit 7 is received.
Does Meadowlark intend to adhere to the tree and shrub mitigation specifications as well?
Yes.
And based on the studies and analyses that have been conducted and the testimony that you have presented today, what are some of the conclusions that Meadowlark has reached regarding this project?
We have found that the New Frontier project satisfies the general site selection factors and the need to be satisfied in order to have a viable wind energy project. This includes an excellent wind resource, very receptive and supportive landowners, available transmission capacity with construction of a relatively short generator outlet line. We've designed it to avoid or minimize impacts to the environment, including wetlands and other water bodies. The project will provide several economic benefits, such as jobs, tax payments, lease payments, and will also help renewable energy source for regional utilities to meet their renewable energy portfolio standards.
I have no further questions.
Mr. Armstrong.
Thank you, Judge. If you could turn to Exhibit 4, the third map, please. Is it your understanding that all of these turbines and access roads that may not have had a Class 3 survey done on, that one will be completed on anything that it has not already been completed on?
Yes, we have actually contacted our crew that has done the original culture surveys and told them, to put them on notice that if there is a day that the snow, the dusting of the snow does go away, to go out there immediately and survey the areas that have changed.
And regardless of whether it's before winter or sometime this spring, no construction would begin in those areas until until the Class II surveys have come back?
Correct.
And concurrence has been received by the State Historical Preservation Office?
Correct.
It looks to me on that map, and I just want to make sure I'm reading it right, but it looks like there might be some roads that may have moved or haven't been surveyed. If you look at between, say, 62 and 67 on the east end of that map.
Yeah, so like in an area in between 62 and 67, that's an area where instead of, you know, an original design, they had a angled road through some, you know, through a landowner's field. We went back and tried to square that at a 90-degree angle to work better for the landowners.
And then those areas will also obviously be subject to a Class 3 cultural survey?
Correct.
And you talked about the substation. The location is in the center south end of the project?
Yeah, in the map, the third map in Exhibit 4, the black rectangular shape is the operations and maintenance building, and the yellow square is an approximate size of the project substation.
What will the substation consist of?
You know, we'll have the transformer, breakers. It'll be, you know, a small parking area, and the substation will be fenced off as well.
Does a substation itself produce much noise?
You know, like any electrical, you know, machine, there will be minimal noise.
Yeah. Do you know if it's more or less than the turbines?
That would be less.
Are you the person to ask about correspondence with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service?
No, that would be the next witness, Todd Manson.
Okay, thank you. You mentioned that there's no off-takers as of yet. Is it your intent to have an off-taker before construction begins if the certificate is approved?
Yes, currently at the current time, we will wait for an off-taker before we construct the project.
Have you had any objections from local landowners, whether in the project area itself or around the project area?
You know, all the landowners that I have met with, both participating and not participating, have been very supportive and very anxious for the project. I have met with a couple landowners that do fall outside of it that, you know, made comments that they prefer not to look at them, but that they understand that the project is progression to move forward.
And as I understand, when we look at Exhibit 4 up there with the red line on the entire project area, am I right that everybody within that area has either signed agreements or agreed with the
project? Yes, this is actually, from my view, a very unique site where the entire site within the red boundary, all the landowners have signed up to participate. Well, I should correct. There is a parcel on the south east that we just is not participating, but we had made the red line basically to make it a box. So there is within that actual red box there is a landowner that's not participating.
And that's in the southeast quarter?
Far southeast quarter, yep.
You had mentioned various setbacks from the roads, the missile sites, so on and so forth. And my question for it, some of them are 1.1 times the blade tip height. And as I understand it, there isn't a blade selected yet.
Yep.
Were those 1.1 times the tallest blade tip height?
Yes.
Where in general is the missile site?
If I can go up.
You may.
In the northeast corner of the project area.
And if you could, in the, as I understand, the cable runs through the project site?
There is a cable that they had specifically, when Jim did not want us to list on the maps for security reasons.
Sure.
There is a cable that runs diagonally through the site.
Okay. Is there any further approval that Metalark needs for, in relation to the missile site?
No, you know, we've talked to both Jim Larson from the cabling. We have filed our FAA determinations, which would go to the Department of Defense for their any comments that they would have on the site.
And you mentioned that you're going to have to file an updated one.
Could
you generally explain to us what's changed with the site between the first FAA filing and the one that you will be doing?
Yeah, you know, approximately probably 50% of the actual exact turbine locations have moved, you know, certain hundreds of feet as we designed around wetlands and everything. So we will go back in and update those individual turbine sites with the actual new GPS locations.
As I understand the application, there's a strip mine up in the northwest corner, or out of the boundary, but up in the northwest corner. Mm-hmm. Is there any strippable coal within the project site?
I guess not that I know of or aware of.
I have no further questions.
Mr. Merle.
Thank you. I guess I have only really one question. You had mentioned wind farms tend to stabilize wholesale electricity prices. Can you provide some more detail or color around that?
Yeah. You know, when you look at energy prices, you know, such as, you know, 3-4 years ago when gas prices, you know, wind energy typically competes most with natural gas plants. And when your natural gas plants, you know, currently today are obviously very low cost, but like 3-4 years ago when they were up towards, you know, $12, the energy from wind can help offset that spike, basically.
Okay. I have no further questions.
Questions from the commission. Commissioner Clark.
Just a few, and thank you for being here today. let's go to tab 6 in the exhibits, and this is the Air Force Base correspondence. I noted in the email back from Mr. Larson, his email looks to be specifically on the cable issue, is that right?
Yes.
And that he indicates, I would be happy to forward the project up the chain for comment if you would like.
Yep.
Did you respond to that, and did you receive anything back?
I responded back saying, you know, thank you for the email, and I did not specifically ask him to run it up the chain. My interpretation was that that would be through our FAA determinations of DOD.
I'm just wondering, I'm sort of thinking out loud here. This is probably more of that than a question. But from a record standpoint, I think it would be helpful for the commission to perhaps have a bit more than that. I mean, what we have is kind of a dangling conversation here from what it looks like, where he's, I mean, from his standpoint, it seems to be okay. But then he asks, I'd be happy to forward this up the project chain of command if you'd like. And it would seem to indicate that maybe there's something else up the chain of the command that the commission might want to know about. Would it be possible for there to be some sort of documentation on a further response, you know, yes, please do send it up the chain for comment?
We can certainly provide that, although that was not the request that was made, that it be sent up the chain. So what we provide won't necessarily address your issue, I guess.
Right. I just, from a commission standpoint, it would seem like, or at least from a record standpoint, it'd be nice to have some sort of finality, if that could even be gotten from DOD. I don't claim to understand all of the processes that they need to go through. So anyway, I mean, it's your application, so I'll leave it to your discretion, but it would seem like it would be nice to have something a little bit more final.
Are we going to commissioners? This, I
think it should be actually a late filed exhibit. For the record, Ms. Smith, I suggest that be 6A.
6A, all right.
As a supplemental information USAF approval. Is that satisfactory?
Yes.
Mr. Armstrong?
No objection.
Exhibit 6A is as described is received as a late filed exhibit.
Thank you. And then following up on that, the second issue which you had mentioned, I didn't see any documentation in here, but and question that I had was in regard to, I think, aviation issues. In a previous certificate that the commission approved for the project just south of Minot along Highway 83, this came up as an issue as well. It goes through a number of sites, and there the issue was flight patterns to the turbines themselves. And maybe this was the issue that you were referring to, mm-hmm. where they didn't have cable issues, but in terms of rapid response, if they needed to send a team to a silo, they need to know exactly the correct flight path to take, and with night vision and things like that, they don't often sort of go well with mm-hmm. turbine blades spinning around. Is that the issue that they're going to be following up on with the FAA?
Yeah, there is the I guess what they call the facility military route, and I think that would probably, I'm not 100% sure, but I'm sure that's probably what that follows through, that the flying of the helicopters into that facility. That's where I have been told of the 1,200, the minimum they would like to see is the 1,200 foot setback from that building. We've also provided them not only our cables and access roads, but also all the turbine locations in a GIS file.
Right, but this issue seemed, as I recall, it seemed to go beyond just setbacks. I mean, setbacks mm-hmm. are one issue, but the other is simply turbine layout.
Yep.
As a matter of flight pattern, you might have an acceptable setback, but you have to know exactly where those turbines are between the Air Force Base and the facility, launch facility.
Yeah, and they should be able to determine that with the files we sent actually have the specific turbine locations on there. So, like with Jim and, you know, his team, I mean, they do know exactly where the turbine location does sit.
Will there be an actual document that could be submitted to this record that would indicate that they've given final approval to that in regards to flight patterns and response teams? I mean, will there actually be a sheet of paper, a document that could be put in this record so that we'd have that?
Typically, that's what the FAA determinations are. You know, if they comment on it and have specific issues of that flight pattern, that would come up through those determinations.
Okay. And I apologize, was that intended to be put in this record, or could it be?
Well, the FAA, all permits are required to be submitted as part of prior to construction, so those copies of those permits okay. would be filed prior to construction.
Okay, thank you. And again, your timetable, thinking when you'll have that, would be what?
You know, our plan is to have construction ready by second quarter mm-hmm. of next year, pending an off-taker.
Right.
So.
Okay. Turbine availability. I mean, you mentioned having mm-hmm. an off-taker. One of the things that I've heard, just generally speaking, in the industry is this is becoming a big issue with the PTC potentially expiring mm-hmm. at the end of next year. Do you have a yep. sense for turbine availability for next year? Even if you get an off-taker, are you going to be able to guarantee delivery of parts and yep. labor and get it all installed by the end of the year?
Yeah, you're exactly correct. I mean, with the possible non-extension of the PTC at the end of next year, there are numerous projects that are trying to move forward. Turbine supply that we've been in contact with our vendors changes day to day. One day you call and there's maybe 20 megawatts of turbines available, but then a week later they call and said, well, this 100 megawatt project actually canceled, so now we have 100 megawatts of turbines available. So yes, the supply is getting tight, but I'm confident that there's turbines still available that we can use.
Okay. Highway 41 dissects this project. In fact, we drove up it from Bismarck this morning, and you can see why the site selected as you head down into the valley off of the escarpment. You don't have to be a meteorologist to figure out why the wind it blows there. How close is the closest turbine to Highway 41?
The closest turbine would be 1.1 times the tip height, the setback of the largest turbine, so that's approximately 530 feet.
Okay.
That's from the edge of the right-of-way.
Sure. From the edge of the right-of-way, not from the center line of
Correct.
The road.
Okay. Correct.
You had said the generator interconnection, that you're in the later stages of the facility study with MISO. You said it was, you expected it to be done in late 20...
First quarter 2012.
Okay, first quarter 2012. Yep. The... Tabs 11 and 12, I guess I don't know if they've been offered yet or not. I don't recall the acoustic and shadow flicker studies. Would that be for a later witness?
Yes, sir.
Okay, very good. That's all I have. Thank you.
Commissioner Kramer.
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony. And Tony asked exactly the questions I was going to ask, except for about one or two. First of all, I have to say, I've never, all the projects that have ever come before us, we've never had this type of a menu of possible turbine types. So I suspect the moment does provide a lot of fluidity with the availability of the various models.
Yes.
You've said a couple of times basically that everything's pending the power purchase agreement or some other mm-hmm. offtake. And I was looking at your application and noticed that Minnesota does not even halfway to their RPS goal. Mm-hmm. Have you considered being a merchant in this environment?
From the merchant standpoint that we've looked at, it's very, very difficult in North Dakota just because they call the LMP, the liquid market price, is extremely low because there's so much generation up here and it's mm-hmm. not being used here. It's being, shipped farther east. There's also a significant amount of congestion at the North Dakota-Minnesota border where, if you're going merchant, you are the first one then that gets shut off. So mm-hmm. it makes it very difficult.
Your production cost is about $2 million a megawatt. Is that pretty much right in line with the market right now, do you think, or is it on the...
Yeah, I mean, we've obviously seen over the past couple of years that turbine prices have fallen pretty significantly with the economy. Also, the BOP, the contractors, with the economy being slow, that some of that pricing is coming down as well. So I would say right now we're pretty much at the bottom or near the bottom of what mm-hmm. pricing would be.
How about the interconnection price?
Our interconnection price, like we said before, this is a very, very unique site where there's actually capacity available at the substation that we're injecting to as a network resource. Basically, we have to replace a transformer. We have no network upgrades that we need to do, which is very, most wind farms that are in the queue process now need to wait for big 345 or 230 kV lines to be built from mm-hmm. Minnesota up here, like the CapEx 2020 lines, et cetera.
All right, I have nothing further. Thank you.
Commissioner Koch.
Thank you for your testimony, and Ms. Smith, thank you for asking all the right questions. It's funny how the process emerges. We ask a few questions hearing before. Next thing you know, you bring them out there, so thank you for doing that. I just had a couple add-ons that, like Kevin brought out, Tony asked a lot of good questions, too. Just want to make sure I heard you correctly. I thought during your testimony you said the setbacks was from the center of the road, and then Commissioner Clark asked you and you said the road right away.
Yep.
Which one is it?
There is a difference. The only one that was from the center line was the McHenry County unimproved or county roads or section lines. Everything out, any improved road was 1.1 times the tip of the height of the blade.
So improved roads from the right away.
Yep.
County roads, if you will, the center of the road.
Unimproved county roads, like a prairie road that has not been maintained or improved.
And that's fine with the county? You talked to them about that?
Verbally, we've talked about it, we are working through the ordinances I talked about, and I envision that they would accept on those certain parcels where there's not an unimproved road to allow for landowners to have, a turbine. There's a couple occasions that I've worked through with the county and shown that if there is a greater setback on those unimproved section lines that those landowners would not be able to host a turbine, and their response was that they want to make sure that landowners are able to participate in the project.
Fair enough. Okay, and then just two general question comments. I don't know much you've been following the, you know, obviously Tony brought it up in his opening comments, all the wind development going on, but there's been a couple cases where we've had turbine failures. There was one north here in Rugby where basically the hub just fell off, and we had the wind farm to the northwest up here, one of the blades failed. And looks like they both came back because of weather events where something happened during assembly or the weather just, the equipment wasn't able to hold up. What precautions are you taking, not knowing what your turbines are going to be, that you're able to assemble correctly and that the composites are the right pieces?
I mean, the turbines that we've selected, you know, are what I would consider, you know, class one turbines that have been proven throughout either, you know, the U.S. and through, you know, the world in general. You know, our construction crew is very experienced. Our on-site construction manager is there to ensure that, you know, blades and hubs and things are being properly installed correctly. You know, there's also the turbine vendor actually supplies workers as things, the wind farm is being constructed to make sure that, you know, the turbines are being erected per their specifications.
Sure. And I know you have a construction timeline now, but if that changes because you don't get somebody to buy it, I mean, do you have any internal protocols that say if it's above this wind speed, we don't get up there? If it's below this temperature, we don't try to put things together?
We do, and I cannot speak to that because that would be our construction manager, but I know we do, that there are certain wind speeds that they will not, or weather conditions that they will not perform lifts in.
Okay, thank you. That was all that I had.
Further questions from the commission? Follow-up, Ms. Smith?
No, Your Honor.
Mr. Armstrong?
No, Judge.
Mr. Merle?
No.
All right. You know, why don't we take just a quick recess, an opportunity to fill your coffee cups if you wish, and then at the same time, let me say again, if anybody wishes to address the commission, and if you have any questions, only if you have any questions that I can help you with, this would be a time to talk to me. So let's be in recess until 12:15.